The Create and Thrive Podcast, Episode 7, The Do's and Don'ts of Customer Service at Markets and Shows.
But I think as long as you treat each person with respect and like a person, not somebody who's there just to give you money, then you're going to have a really good relationship with them.
I'm Jess Van Den, and this is the Create and Thrive Podcast. A former school teacher, I turned my handmade hobby into a thriving business, and I also teach other creatives how to do the same. My goal is to help you learn how to turn your creative hobby into a thriving, profitable business. So let's get learning. Hey Thrivers, Jess here. Welcome to the show. So this week, Kath and I are having a conversation about selling at markets and shows and fairs. And we're going to be covering some of the do's and don'ts of that very thing. Kath's been in retail since she was 15, so over 15 years now, and she's gone through a lot of training about, you know, how to interact with your customer face to face, you know, how to engage them, and how to help them to leave the interaction with you, whether it was a transaction interaction or not, feeling happy and upbeat and positive about your brand. So we're going to be chatting about that, and she's going to be sharing a lot of her insights with you. Now, when you finish this episode, if you know, selling at markets and shows is something you do regularly and it's something you want to learn more about, we actually have a self-study e-course available over on Create and Thrive called How to Sell More at Markets and Shows. And some of what we cover in this episode today, you'll get a little bit of sneak peek into what's in the course. So there's a lot more detail about all of these elements in the course. And it's just a 2-week long course. You can start it at any time, and you get an email a day for the length of the course with a lesson a day. So if you do want to improve your sales at markets and shows, that might be something that you'd like to check out. But until then, let's get on with the show. Today we're going to be talking about selling at markets and shows. Now, I'm going to defer to Kath on this because she is way more experienced at selling at markets and shows than I am.
Thank you.
That is a big part of why, if you've been over on the blog and seen our self-study e-course, How to Sell More at Markets and Shows, Kath is the one who's written that for us. So she knows her stuff, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today.
Fabulous.
Awesome. So let's kind of jump in from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Let's start with us as a person, because a lot of times people focus on their stall setup, and that's important, and we'll talk about that. But
yes.
What's the, you know, we have to kind of look the part as well, don't we? We have to worry about how we look when we
Absolutely.
Sell.
I think one of the most important things to remember when you're selling in any venue is that the way that you look directly impacts the first impression that your customer gets about your entire brand, including your product. So if you are looking the part, then people are going to get that amazing impression of what your business is all about. So I always think you dress to impress, but you suit your product. So, you know, you wouldn't rock up in a full suit and, you know, your hair slicked back and knee-high boots if you were selling, you know, very flowy and feminine clothing, for instance, or if you were doing, you know, lovely, luscious body oils or anything like that. So you need to dress to impress, but it needs to suit your product.
And I think people kind of maybe forget at times that they are a part of their stall, if you know what I mean. Like, they're part of the dressing, the window dressing of their stall, so to speak.
Yes.
And I think, you know, there are some retailers, you know, think about how normal, in inverted commas, retailers do things. That, you know, you can kind of learn from their example, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you walk into David Jones, you don't expect to see somebody who has, you know, hair all over the place and no makeup on and mismatched, you know, shoes on or anything like that. You want to see somebody who's really well dressed and really well presented. However, if you walked into, say, Tree of Life, then you're going to think you would expect to see somebody who's a little bit more got a bit of a more interesting aesthetic to the mm-hmm. way that they dress. You might expect them to have a bit of, like, you know, just got out of bed hair, that sort of thing, because it suits their product.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for those listening who aren't in Australia, David Jones is a big sort of higher-end department store, and Tree of Life is sort of a hippie shop, really, isn't it? Yeah. I love that
That's
shop.
That's good. Yeah, me too.
lots of batik and sterling silver jewellery and yes. stuff like that.
Yeah, gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, and that's a great example, I think, you know. And I think it should be pretty straightforward for most of us, because generally speaking, we probably suit like our products, don't we? Like, it's probably our personal aesthetic. So
yeah, that's right.
We just kind of have to dress in our regular aesthetic with maybe putting a little bit more effort in. And, you know, someone like me, I don't wear makeup, you know, but I care about the clothes I put on, especially when I'm presenting or whenever I'm in a public place. So you don't have to, like, change who you are or anything like that. You just have to, you know, make sure how you present yourself is in line with the products you're selling.
And I think the best way to put it is be the best version of yourself. Yes. So, you know, get yourself dressed up as if you are going to a party or going to something special. Don't just, you know, wear what you're going to wear to the shops that day. So you just have to dress exactly how you would, but for the best version of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, your appearance is kind of one part of the puzzle. But how about your personality or your aspect, like how you put yourself forward to the customer, you
know? Yes.
Will that always be the same person to person, or will it vary?
I think obviously it's always going to vary, and you need to be aware that people who are coming in as customers are people. They're not just numbers on board. They're not just automatons. You know, they're all going to have different experiences. Maybe they're having a good day. Maybe they're having a bad day. But I think as long as you treat each person with respect and like a person, not somebody who's there just to give you money, then you're going to have a really good relationship with them. So smiling is always the best way to start any engagement with anyone, really. But I think, yeah, one of the most important things is to give that person that walks up to your stall a big smile. Even if you don't say hello immediately, it's just that friendly vibe that you put off.
I'm always astounded. Now, I've done markets and I know how tiring it can be to stand there all day. But I'm always quite astounded when I go to a market and so many people are not even doing that. Like, they're not smiling or they're completely ignoring you or whatever they're doing. But just that very simple thing, the smile, I mean, it's an immediate turn on or turn off, isn't it? If somebody
if you
is
don't
doing
give that.
That
smile.
Yeah.
That's right. I think for me, I've been in retail since I was 15. So I've been lucky enough to be taught by larger businesses who have really excellent training programs about how to be a good sales assistant.
Yeah.
I think I probably have taken that information and made it a little bit more authentic than the way that they teach it. But the information that they teach you is excellent. So one of the very most fundamental things of retail is acknowledging your customer immediately. So as I said, that can be smiling or it can be saying hello or how are you, but it's not jumping on them immediately and trying to put out your sales pitch. That's not what it's about. So in that first kind of few seconds or 30 seconds when they approach your stall, acknowledging your customer is the most important thing. And then after that, having a real conversation with your customers, really important. So I always like to choose something about them that I do like. I don't sit there thinking I'm going to compliment that because I know it will get me in as a, you know, we're going to have a conversation. I think to myself, oh, I'm really loving their hair. It's bright red. How amazing. So instead of just thinking that, say it out loud. Say that to your customer and make them feel special because you've noticed something that's really cool about them. And I mean, whilst you're doing that, you're also trying not to be somebody who you aren't.
Yes.
So again, coming back to that authenticity, you want to make sure that you're still within your own personality. If you're not somebody who likes to be loud and the biggest personality in the room, that's fine. You don't have to be. But finding those ways of negotiating that and finding a conversation that you can have with your customer in your own authentic way is the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I do the same thing, like if I notice someone has a cool handbag or awesome shoes, or even though I'm selling jewellery, if someone's wearing a piece of jewellery that I think is really awesome, you know, I'll actually bring their, you know, I'll say, hey, that's really cool. And like you said, I'll just say it. And it's genuine. I'm not just, I mean, you know, you have in the back of the mind, obviously thinking about how can I connect with this person, and if you find something you can genuinely comment on, then do that, and that works really, really well to break the ice. And like you said, they realise that, oh, this person's actually paying attention to me, they actually care. But there can be such a thing as paying too much attention to someone, especially in a very small setting, like if you have just one trestle table or something like that. Like, how can you kind of, you know, show the person you're interested but then not be harassing them? Because I mean I hate it as a customer if I am at a market store or a shop or whatever and the person is staring at me or looming over me or following me around. So how do we strike that balance?
So I always try to behave like I am busy in whatever way that needs to be, but that I am always available.
Right.
So if you have to do some busy work while they're standing there, after you've had your conversation, maybe you find that they don't want to have a conversation with you, and that's not a problem, but they do want to continue to look at your stall. Well, then you find something that you can very casually be doing. Perhaps that's putting some stamps on your bags or just rearranging the things behind your stall. But always be immediately available. So you're facing forwards always, never turn your back to the customer. You're not just sitting there staring at them, but you are always available. As soon as they're ready to say, can I have a look at this, or I would like to buy this, then you are ready, willing and able to jump onto that that request. And that's how you ensure that they're getting their needs met, is just being constantly available.
Yeah, and being aware of their, you know, their vibe. That sounds really stupid, but you know what I mean, like what their sort of attitude they're putting out there. If they're in their body language, you know, are they stooped over kind of and ignoring you, or are they open and sort of looking, like if their eyes are flicking up to you, that usually means they want to ask you a question.
That's right.
So you can say, oh, was there anything you wanted to know more about, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yes.
And so those are some of the things we should be doing, obviously. What are some of the things we shouldn't be doing when we have someone at our stall?
Talking. So if you have somebody who is next to you on a stall, and even if they're your bestest friend in the whole wide world, you need to be paying attention to your customer while your customer is standing there, not talking to your neighbour. So the worst possible look ever in a store is, imagine you walk into a little boutique and it's a small store and there are two people standing behind the counter and they're just gas bagging about their weekend and they're talking about how hilarious it was on their night out and et cetera, et cetera. And you're wanting to get some service. Well, you don't want to interrupt them, really, do you?
No.
You don't want to. You don't want to jump in the middle.
You feel like you're going
to
be rude.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's rude to interrupt their conversation. And so that's the same thing at a market. If you're talking to your stall neighbour, well, your customer doesn't feel empowered to jump in and ask you a question, and so they might walk away because they just didn't feel like there was an opportunity to have a conversation with you. So that is my number one pet peeve. And if you could change one thing about your day at the markets, it would be talk to your neighbours whilst there's no customers there, but also have an understanding with them that as soon as a customer turns up, I will be talking to my customer. No offence to you. You're a great person, but I will be cutting off that conversation mid-sentence to go and help my customer.
And I think it's a fair enough thing to actually literally talk to them about that beforehand.
Absolutely.
Because there'll be some people who will understand, but there'll be other people who might not understand. And by actually communicating that from the get-go, you know, you can say, oh, I'm working on some new sales techniques, and, you know, one of the things I'm going to be doing is, you know, making sure I'm not ignoring my customers.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's
great. Apologies in advance if we're talking and I just completely ignore you suddenly. It's because I see a customer coming, then I want to engage them, and they'll be fine. And it might even help them do the same
thing. That's right. It's good learning for them.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of the other things that people do wrong?
Okay, well, that's my that was my pet peeve, so I'm glad I've got that one across. But there's a couple other things I think are difficult. They're not difficult, sorry, they're something you need to practice. Mm-hmm. So having a sales pitch is wonderful. Having something that you can tell people about your product, certain phrases that you've kind of thought up beforehand is excellent. However, you don't want to just launch into that as soon as somebody approaches your mm-hmm. stall. So jumping immediately onto your potential customers with a sales pitch is a big no-no.
Right.
You need to have that trust between you before you start talking about your products mm-hmm. And, you know, telling them about a sale you're having or any of that sort of stuff. So that's another big no-no. You need to have a little bit of an idea of how your customer is reacting to you first, reacting to your product, and then you might be able to start talking about your product. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. And the other really big one is lying or bending the truth. So right. lying's a very strong word, mm-hmm. but often we have that feeling of the used car salesman. So
right.
that icky, you know, slimy person who's trying to sell something that's not as good as mm-hmm. they're saying it is. And I think we, as salespeople in our own industry, occasionally can get sucked into the idea of thinking that we have to tell the customer what they want to hear mm-hmm. instead of telling them the truth.
Right.
Because if you tell the customer what they want to hear and it's not the truth, they're going to realize that pretty soon.
Yes.
They'll get home and realize that it's not sterling silver mm-hmm. or it's not what you said it was. Mm-hmm. And then there's a distrust has started. So either they're going to be, oh, absolutely. Either they're going to be very unhappy with you and come back to you mm. and then you'll have to deal with that, or they're going to badmouth your brand or go onto your Facebook page and have a rant and all those sorts of things. You want to avoid that. That's awful. Nobody wants to have to deal with that. So you can completely avoid it by just telling the truth right from the get-go.
I mean,
even if it means that you lose a sale.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, honesty and authenticity is obviously the number one thing, and we probably bang on about that a lot on this podcast. But I mean,
it's
important. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone listening would ever deliberately lie or bend the truth, but sometimes there's just something happens. They ask some question or something might come up, and mm-hmm. you know, there's that little voice that says, "Well, you know, if I just what?" But don't.
If
yeah,
I say yes, then they'll buy it.
You
will not avoid that.
No, and it goes for anything online. Like, for example, here's one that might happen to many of us, whether at a market or selling online. Somebody might say, "I really need this by a certain date. Can you do that?" Or mm-hmm. will I get it by that date? And the temptation, even if you know that it's probably not going to happen, mm-hmm. the temptation is to just go, well, it might, so let's just say it will and go with mm-hmm. it and hope for the best.
That's
and
right.
you know, that's an example of you're not lying, but you're not telling the full truth, if you know what I mean.
That's right. Yes.
And that is not a good thing. Like, that's a mistake, because like you said, even if you lose the customer, it's better to say, well, here's the situation. You know, I will be able to get it done by this date. Then I'll have to send it to you and it will take this long. So the chances of that happening are whatever percentage chance that might be. And, if they decide, well, that's not fast enough or whatever, then you just have to go, sorry, I couldn't help you. Good luck. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is just arming them with the full facts to make their own decision. And I can't tell you how many customers I've kept. So I might have lost a sale, but I've kept a customer from being brutally honest or honest about the fact that I'll think of an example. When I was in the retail store and I had a bricks and mortar store, I had an artist that stocked my store, but she also stocked another, I'll call her a competitor, but she was actually a friend of mine. She had a similar business, and I could either have said to my customer, oh yes, I can order in the brooch that you want and have it here, you know, in a couple of days, which it probably wouldn't have happened. It would have taken about a week to get there. Or I could send her directly to my competitor's store because I know that she has one. So that's me keeping my customer but losing the sale, because that lady came back again and again because she really appreciated.
Wow, that is a really, really awesome way of putting things.
Yeah.
You know, keep the customer. Even though you might lose a sale, but you'll keep the customer because you're thinking long term, and that's what it really comes down to.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I've done the same thing. Like, I've had customers, online customers, who've come to me and said, oh, can you do this design, you know, and set this stone in or whatever. Mm. And I actually send them to my competitors, people I know who can do it, because I can't, or I don't have the time, or I don't have the ability for whatever. And I don't, you know, to me, that's just helping my customer. Even though they might never buy anything from me, I still, they'll walk away, or type away, whatever, mouse away from my shop with a positive feeling and knowing that I will help them. And that's, I think that's the best thing you can possibly do, really.
It's being a good human being.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so we obviously, you know, be brutally honest in a pleasant way.
In a good way.
Yeah, yeah. We make sure that we smile, greet our customer, be open to, you know, and again, body language, making sure your body's facing towards them, but your eyes aren't on them all the time. So it's those two tricks. What are some of the other things that people do wrong, salespeople at markets do wrong? Because I know there's a few more.
Yes, I think sitting down at your stall, I know you get really tired. I know that it can be, you can be there for sometimes that 10 hours after you've been setting up and you get yourself ready, and then you're there for the whole day and you're packing down. You can be on your feet for 10 to 12 hours. It can happen depending on the fair or the market that you're at. So I understand that sitting down is something that you'll be craving and you'll really want to be off your feet at some point. And if you're somebody that absolutely needs to have a seat, that's okay.
Yeah.
But if anybody comes towards you, you need to immediately stand. So if people are walking past your stall, if there is somebody approaching your stall, so they're beelining for your stall, stand up immediately. I mean, you don't have to stand up and walk towards the table in a menacing way or anything. It just, if you very casually stand up, then that says to your customer, I'm ready. I'm ready to serve you. So you are putting your body language into a very positive stance. So I think my pet peeve as well, is two now, is if you're sitting and you're doing a craft, you're sitting on and knitting, or you're reading or doing your Sudoku or whatever it is, how can you possibly be watching the body language and watching the people that are approaching or are close by? And you can't make eye contact. You can't have a body language dialogue with anybody. So if you can, and I understand that some people absolutely cannot stand up the whole day, not a problem. But if you can, make sure that you're at least always standing and facing forwards when your customer is close by. And when I say your customer, I mean anybody. That your customer is anybody walking by.
That's a really good point. And I think one thing to think about too is, you know, there's ways to modify that. For example, what I've done in the past, I have a trestle table that actually goes higher than normal ones. Because my I've got jewellery and it's small, and I don't want people to have to bend right over to look at. So my display's a bit higher, and I actually take a bar stool
with me,
so that even when I'm, like, if I want to perch on the bar stool, I'm still at almost at head height level.
That's it.
With my customer. And I think that's the big thing. Like, and, you know, I'm not sitting right up on there. I'm kind of just resting a hip on there or something like that, so that I can just take the weight off a foot or two at a time and just have a little break. But as soon as someone comes, you know, you just pop up and actually be standing. And that's a nice modification. That means your customers aren't looming over you. Like, I hate it as a customer at a market if I come up to someone and their table's really low and they're sitting really low and I feel like I'm kind of looming. looming over them, and it feels really uncomfortable. So that's something I think you should try to avoid.
That's a fantastic idea.
And also the whole trying to raise your display up. I think the most effective displays are the ones that aren't just flat on the table, but are actually brought up to the customer's eye level a bit more.
Absolutely.
However that works for your particular product, obviously.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation, but it's a good one.
Yeah, definitely. So we don't want to be sitting down. We don't want to be grumpy.
Happy.
We want to try, I assume another one is, which may not be possible 100% of the time, but try not to be eating and drinking when there's people.
I sometimes feel like, oh, yeah, that's a given. But it's not. If you haven't been in retail, then you might not think that that's such a big deal. But I guess it's put yourself in the customer's shoes. Would you like to walk into a shop, or would you like to walk up to a market store and somebody's shoving their face full of food?
Not really.
Probably not.
I mean, as a maker myself and someone who's done markets, I understand.
Yeah.
Why they do, because they've been probably there all day by themselves and they're
hungry,
starving, right?
Yeah.
And I totally understand that. But you got to remember, most people coming up to your stall are not, have not been in your position. No. They don't understand that. So all they see is somebody, like you said, eating, stuffing their face. Probably pretty quickly and desperately. trying to eat as fast as possible. But I actually think it's better, even if you're by yourself, to get your neighbour to watch your stall for 10 minutes while you go somewhere else and eat and then come back. Because it just
I agree. Looks it's better. Not a good look. It's not a good look to eat at your stall.
No. So definitely something to if consider that's possible, as well. Yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, these are all, everything we're saying here, you know, there's caveats that there may be a situation where, hopefully, except for the smiling.
Yes, that's right.
That's hopefully is something everybody can achieve. But yeah, there may be times when it's not possible, but hopefully most of the time it is possible. And, you know, if you hopefully as well, if you're at a good market or show, there may be like helpers around who can sort of jump in and just watch your stall for 5 minutes while you run off or something like that. So those are all things to consider as well. So what about when things are quiet and there's nobody around? What are some of the things you can be doing in your stall, do you think?
Okay, well, as I said, I really feel like sitting and crafting or reading or Sudoku is not a good look. So if you need to be doing something, my best advice is to tidy your stall.
Right.
It's gonna get messy. People are going to pick things up. They're going to put them down, not where you put them in the first place. So I actually like to get out from behind my stall so that there's nothing in between me and the customers. Mm-hmm. Get out from behind my stall and I start tidying it from one end to the other. Obviously, if people come up and want to look at things, you get out of their way immediately and allow them that space. But what it does is it makes it look like there's someone looking at things at your stall.
Yeah, tricky.
Yes, so it is a bit of a tricksy one. But people just, they flock to what they think other people are interested in.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm. So if you are standing there looking like a customer but tidying your stall, people are more likely to come over and see what all the fuss is about. Mm. So that's one thing I always recommend. And also, as a plus, you're tidying your stall and it's going to look nice for the next person who walks up to it. So that would be my number one point. And then you can chat to your next door neighbour if you've both got nobody there. That's great, because that networking is invaluable. Mm. That talking to somebody else, asking them how their day's going, maybe picking up some tips about how they're selling to their customers, or maybe you've got similar likes or dislikes, or, you know, it can be a really important networking time if you've got not many people around to purchase. And I think, honestly, the best thing to do is just to continue to look busy. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing worse than walking up or into a store or into a market and everybody's just standing still, you know?
Yeah, it can be a bit disconcerting.
You have to make the feeling of that bustling, lovely, fun marketplace yourself if there's not enough customers to make it happen for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, on to just to touch back on the thing, what you said earlier about, you know, people like to flock to where there's people. Mm-hmm. How many times, I don't know if you guys do this, but I know Nick and I do. If we're walking down the road trying to find a restaurant for dinner, which one do you go to?
The busy one.
The busy one. You don't go to the one where there's nobody there because you figure, well, people know better and there's something
they
wrong
must
with that
know
place.
There's something wrong with it. Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
Which could be terrible. I mean, you could be making a big mistake. You could just be following the crowd, but that's just human instinct, to do that. And it's the same in shops. I mean, when you're selling at a market, you'll get those ebbs and flows. You'll get like nothing, and then somebody will come, and then two people, and suddenly there's 10 people, and they can't actually get to your stall, and you're like, oh my God.
Yes, I'm overrun.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But, yeah, you're right. That will make a big difference.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think so in retail, bricks and mortar sort of stores that I've worked in before, there's always a list that's, you know, stuck to the back room wall that says, if you're not busy, here's a list of jobs. And invariably, most of them are cleaning. Again, because if you're darting around the store and you're, you know, dusting this over here and lining up all the hangers so that they look nice and neat and tidy, there's action happening within that store.
Yeah.
And it's the same with your stall. If you're doing something, it looks like something exciting is happening. So.
Okay, so I want to pull out one of these things because we may have some people who disagree with us on this, but the whole making something while you're at your stall issue. So there will be people who will say, if you can actually make your craft, the thing you're selling, while you're at the store, in order to entice people or bring people in. What do you think of that?
I'm always in two minds. I guess it depends what you make. You can't sit there with your sewing machine making your beautiful dresses. So that's not going to work. If you're somebody who does something quite fine and is portable, I guess it can be something that can be a talking point. And that's where people always say, oh, but lots of customers talk to me because I'm doing my craft. So, look, if that's what's working for you and you feel like you're getting a lot of sales from that, well, then you continue doing that. That's great.
Yeah.
I just think in the most part, people become engrossed in what they're doing.
Right.
The salesperson becomes engrossed in what they're doing and doesn't pay attention to what's going on around them. So if you feel like you can do your craft and you can still make eye contact and you can still be looking around and you can be flicking back between those the craft and the customer, I think it's okay. But it's not what I would recommend in general.
I mean, it could even be a case, like, I'm thinking of someone we both know, Rebecca from Edward and Lily. I remember she usually, because she makes little tiny crochet, little tiny embroidery, so she usually has a little tiny thing in her hand that she's working on.
Fabulous.
But she's brilliant at always looking up and engaging her customers. She's never so engrossed in what she's doing.
That's right. And she's always standing whilst she's doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
It. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
So she's standing and crafting and looking around.
Yeah.
If you can do that, wonderful. That's amazing.
And I think one thing you could do as well is that, you know, if there's nobody there, if you, like you said, if you have a small portable craft you can do in your two hands, like knitting or whatever, do it. But as soon as someone comes by, just hold it still. So you're still holding it. So it kind of still looks like you're doing something,
but
you're actually paying attention to your customers.
Yeah.
So as long as paying attention to your customers and selling and being a good, brand ambassador, I guess, for your own work comes first, then I guess there's nothing wrong with doing that.
Absolutely.
But if you know that you're the sort of person who just loses the world when you get engrossed in
then that is
in
not
your craft.
For you.
Yeah.
That
it's like me. Yeah. Like if I'm reading a novel, I totally get completely engrossed in it and I do not notice what is going on around me.
I'm
so
the same.
That would be the worst possible thing I could do at a market would be to read something because half an hour would go by and I would look up and my stuff would be stolen. It'd be all knocked over. I wouldn't even know. Like I would just totally be in my own little world.
Yeah.
And reading is another one that's not a really great idea, is it?
I think regardless. So crafting, because there's at least a connection there. Reading, no. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Oh, how about playing on your phone?
No, that's that is also not good luck.
That is the modern version of reading, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? You might want to be Instagramming and Facebooking because you're at the event and you want to show people that you're at the event. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's totally cool. But instead of being on your phone constantly doing that, be strategic and think, I'm going to take a photo at the beginning of my stall or setup. I might take a sneaky shot of some customers with their permission halfway through the market and I'm going to upload them later. Because honestly, putting yourself up there whilst you're at the market, people aren't going to run out of their house for the last hour that you're there. It'd be unlikely. It'd be unlikely.
Yeah.
If you can get it loaded up, that's great. But like, In a moment of downtime, do those two photos or those two posts, but don't be on your phone posting the entire time you're there.
No, that's a really good call, I think.
Yeah,
because it can, like we're also maybe not all of us listening, but let's be honest, most of us are probably pretty addicted to having our phones in our hands all the time, and it's kind of whenever there's that moment where nothing's going on, it's just habit to reach for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe just like put it somewhere you can't actually get to it.
like put it
in your bag
or
something like that.
Yeah.
So that you can't do that habitual checking thing.
That's right. Don't put it in your pocket.
No, that's right. So we've talked a bit about what to do, what not to do when it comes to actually engaging with your customer. Mm-hmm. We've talked a bit about what to do during the downtime in your stall. Let's go to the sort of the end of the transaction here to wrap up our combo today.
Yep.
How do you connect with your customer afterwards? Or how do you stay connected?
Yeah, so it's a bit of after-sale care, and it's a bit of that marketing to ensure people know who you were. Who did they meet? You know, you sometimes buy things at a market, or maybe you didn't buy it but you wanted to, and you think, oh, I found this really amazing insert product here and I really wanted to buy it, but now I've forgotten who it was, you know. That's the worst feeling. And so you're searching and searching, you can't find them. Or you bought this amazing product and you want to tell all your friends to go and buy it as well, but you don't know what the name of their brand was because you just can't remember. Okay, so they're the problems that you have as a customer leaving the transaction. So most people are pretty on top of this usually, but I'll spell it out anyway. Packaging your products with your logo or at least your name is very important. Having bags with your name on them and business cards or some sort of – it could just be a little information sheet that you've printed off if you don't want to go for business cards at this point. But having that information readily at hand that's packed up with their product is so important. And having something on your table that people can take home with them. I know often people say, oh, people take my business cards, but they never get in contact. And I often think, how do you know that? You don't know for sure that that hasn't, that you haven't had many transactions because of that business, one business card that's left your stall. But you can be sure that they're not going to remember to send people to you if they don't have something to remind them.
Yeah.
So that's super important, having that packaging and the bags and the business cards and having it all very appropriate to your style and aesthetic and your reason that you have your market store. So that's important. Sometimes I verbally tell people which social media I'm on.
Right.
So if they're getting really excited and they're having a really big conversation with me about my brand and how they love my, my soaps and they love this and love that, I say, well, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Handmade High Street and there they are. And people go, oh, great. And that's then sown a little seed in their mind. So when they go home, they go, oh, I should look that up on Facebook because I really loved it. The last thing that I would always do is ask them to sign up for your mailing list. So you taught me that. So I might, maybe I'll pass it over to you. Why is it so important?
Well, because it's the one way you have direct contact with your customer, which is why mailing lists are so important. They are literally the only format through which you you are guaranteed to get direct access. You're guaranteed to get your message through to your customer because social media is great, wonderful, couldn't have grown my business without it, and nor could many people. But you have quite a low percentage. Every time you put a message on social media, you have a quite low percentage of people who will see it. Whereas when you send out an email, unless they, you know, there are people who subscribe to stuff with like a junk email that they never check, right? Because they want to get the special or the whatever. And that's going to happen. Nothing you can do. But most people will subscribe with their regular email that they check every day because there's important stuff in there. And they will at least see your email. They may not read it. You know, there'll be plenty of people who don't click on it for whatever reason. And that's perfectly normal. But they will see it and you will be in their minds. And, you know, you'll have the opportunity to get that message directly to your customer. So if you can get that email, then it's a really powerful tool. And that's why, you know, having some sort of competition or special or giveaway to encourage people to sign up to a mailing list can be really, really powerful, because most people won't just sign up for no reason at all. And I think it's really important to be honest as well. Like, I've had this vivid memory of being probably a teenager or early 20s and going to the ECCA, which is our exhibition state fair, if you're in America, same sort of thing. And there was this place having, you know, this competition where, you know, put your name and email down and you could win something, something. And it was some big prize. And I don't know who it was. I was with somebody. It might have even been one of my parents. And they were just like, oh, well, they're just doing that to get your email address so they can spam you. So, you know, obviously we didn't do it. But the problem was is that they weren't upfront about that fact. You know, it was kind of like trying to tricksy people into getting their email, because most people aren't marketers and don't think about those sorts of things.
No.
So I think it's important if you do run a special or a giveaway or something like that, that you're upfront with the fact that, yep, you'll get this thing and then you will get email
an
from
email
me.
A week yeah. or an email a month. Yeah. yeah.
And make yeah. it a positive thing and say, oh, you'll yeah. get my new designs or any other specials I put out. Or
you'll be the first to see when I've got something new.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, give them something tangible that's a benefit from to them. And if, you know, they don't love your stuff, then don't worry about it. Because frankly, once your business grows, you're actually going to be end up paying for these subscribers. You're going to be paying for the people who are subscribed to your mailing list. So you don't want people there who don't want to be there.
Yeah, just making up the numbers.
Yeah, it's way more powerful to have 10 highly engaged subscribers than it is to have 1,000 people who just are there but don't actually ever engage or buy anything.
So true.
Yeah. Like, I think people sometimes when they have a mailing list are afraid to send out messages because they feel like they're going to be bothering people. Now, you could perhaps go that way. Like, there may be people who are sending an email every day and that might just be irritating. But you know what? They can unsubscribe. They don't have to stay there. So you need to realize that they're there because they want to hear from you. And as long as you're giving them something useful and valuable, then that's great.
Yep.
And a sale or
they're
a special
happy,
or,
happy.
Yeah, or a new product are all useful and valuable things if they care about your brand. So I could, again, talk about this all day, so I'll just stop there. But, yes, if you can get, people on your mailing list, very powerful, definitely.
Absolutely.
So I think we've covered a lot of really great stuff there today.
Yep.
So just to sum up, dress, be your best self, dress to suit your product and remember you're part of your display. When somebody comes along or walks along, we smile, we say hello if it's appropriate, we don't jump on them with a sales pitch straight away. We make sure that we're open with our body language, making sure we're paying attention to their body language and all those sorts of things. We're honest and helpful, even if it means sending someone to a competitor, because we might lose a sale, but we'll keep the customer. And remember to have some way of helping your customer know who you are after the fact. One thing I like is stalls where they don't just have the signs that say, find me on Facebook or Twitter, but they actually have their link. So like on Facebook /, this is my thing, and at, Ethereal on Instagram or something like that, because it makes it really easy for the person to just type it in right there and then they don't have to go searching for it. Yeah. Or if they're the young crowd, they'll just take a photo of it. And
that's it, exactly.
It makes it easy for them to follow you later. So I think that's a really nice little thing you can do as well.
Yes. Fabulous.
Awesome.
Yay.
Thanks so much for chatting with me today, Kath.
Thanks for having me.
Extremely useful. And I hope everybody listening got at least one little tidbit of advice out of that. And if you did, I would love to hear what it is. So make sure to come over to the blog and leave a comment or leave a comment on the Facebook page and tell us what you found useful. And also if you have any tips, for any suggestions for
love to hear them.
Yeah, what works really well for you when selling face-to-face at markets and stores, we would love to hear them. And that's it for this week, Thrivers. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Again, if you were interested in checking out that self-study e-course that we have, head over to createandthrive.com and look for courses and you'll find a link to it there to find out more. I will chat to you next week. In the meantime, if you want to read the show notes for this episode, make sure to head over to createandthrive.com/CT podcast and you'll find the link to this episode there to find out more. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And I'll chat to you next week. Bye for now.